Hey, this is Todd Stacy, and welcome to In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. Thanks for listening, and let me take this opportunity to wish you a happy 4th of July, a happy 4th of July weekend. Despite everything that's going on in the world, I hope that you and your family were able to enjoy the holiday and celebrate the birth of our nation. Today, we're going in the weeds on workforce development. This is a topic that we've covered a lot at Alabama Daily News because it is a key cog in the wheel of economic development for our state. Alabama is not a fast-growing state. We just don't have droves of people clamoring to locate here like they do in Arizona and Florida and other growing states. So to attract industry, we really have to demonstrate that our existing workforce is capable of helping make companies successful if they locate here. And a lot of time and effort has gone into Alabama's workforce development model over the decades. But I'd say in the last few years, it has really hit its peak in terms of efficiency. And a lot of that is just meeting the demand of the day. But like everything else these days, the pandemic has impacted states' plans. At the start of 2020, there's no question that Alabama's economy was rolling. We had a historic low 2.7% unemployment rate in February. Tens of thousands of jobs were being added every month to the economy. And the biggest problem for economic and workforce development leaders seemed to be having enough trained workers to fill those available jobs. In fact, the state had recently launched an ambitious plan to credential an additional 500,000 workers to meet those employment demands. Now, credentialing an additional 500,000 workers doesn't mean a whole new 500,000, you know, half a million workers are suddenly added to the workforce. That's probably impossible. Much of that number could have already been in the workforce, but they get an improvement to their career pathway potential through a credential. But the state did want to add many new workers to that workforce, but I just want to clarify that that 500,000 number isn't, you know, people off the bench. A lot of them would be, but it's also people already in the game that maybe can improve their position. So here we were, 2.7% unemployment rate, tens of thousands of jobs being added to the economy every month, and then the coronavirus hit. And much of Alabama's economy came to a screeching halt. Unemployment reached 14.7% in April. It rebounded slightly to 9.9% by May. Ironically, as many as 500,000 workers were displaced from their jobs here in the state, either directly or indirectly to the outbreak. So here we were with a goal of we're going to credential 500,000 workers, and it turns out that's almost exactly how many workers were displaced by the coronavirus outbreak. So instead of seeming ambitious, that workforce development goal is now considered a necessity just for the state's economic recovery and getting those hundreds of thousands of people back to work. And I'll say this, after talking with several state leaders about how it has impacted things, they are optimistic that the planning that they've put in place will put Alabama ahead of the curve once the pandemic ends. Before I go any further, let me say, I encourage you to read our story about this, our full story about this. Mary Sell and I went in depth to look at where the state stands with economic development, where this workforce goal of 500,000 workers stands. It was about a year ago that we originally wrote about it. And so an update was probably necessary anyway, but here we are, you know, 3-4 months into a pandemic, everything has changed. And, you know, we're going to talk to Tim McCartney. We'll have some more detail on this in the podcast, but I encourage you to go read that story. I will link it in this story link so you can read it again. It's worth your time. And instead of training workers to meet the high employment demands that existed before the virus, the state now sees an opportunity to essentially help the current workers who were displaced become more employable in that post-pandemic economy. So the goal hasn't changed. They say 500,000 workers, yes, we need to add that. But instead of, you know, an additional 500,000 to you know put them in the workforce and get them to, you know, fill those jobs that we wanted to recruit. And there still might be a, you know, some of that. Now we have 500,000 workers who are, you know, have been displaced, and maybe the state can do something through the different job training apparatus that we have to help those workers achieve a different level of skill or credentialing that is required to get a better job. So a little background on Alabama's workforce development apparatus, as it were. For decades, those efforts consisted of myriad job training programs in schools. There's, of course, the K-12 public school system, which is where all education starts. There's the two-year college system, which has 24 community colleges scattered throughout the state. There's also the Alabama Industrial Development Training Agency, which works within the Department of Commerce. They have several specific job training centers throughout the state, like industry specific, and they're the ones that, you know, when the Department of Commerce is recruiting an industry, an industry has certain workforce needs, and AIDT are the ones that go in and say, okay, here's what we can do to help train your workers. And oftentimes that leads to a direct partnership with the state, sometimes even on the campus of that industry, to train those workers. Pretty fascinating stuff that they've developed over the years. Those different entities have sometimes developed duplicative missions, and so oftentimes also developed turf battles, kind of political turf battles, which is common in state government. But I'd say this, the last three governor's administrations have really sought to streamline that system into a more cohesive network. And in recent years, Governor Kay Ivey has tried to transition the state, all those programs, into ones that are intended to work directly with industries to see what skills are needed and then shape the training efforts according to that. And by that I mean, perhaps in the past, we have developed education programs from K-12 to the community colleges all the way through our job training model that, you know, existed before we started asking. So you basically hope that the industries that we're recruiting and that are coming here, and the industries that are here and growing, you hope that they are going to need the product that we put out in terms of a credentialed worker, in terms of a graduate. Flip that on its head. What the state is trying to do now is ask industries, work directly with them. What do we need? What do you need in your industries, in the jobs that you have? What kind of worker? And then they shape the training program according to that. They're calling it occupational DNA. And this is what's mapped out by the Governor's Office of Education and Workforce Training in partnership with the Alabama Workforce Council. The idea is to help set workers on this career pathway that can be more productive. But it really goes beyond job training. And that's what I think the real fascinating part of this story is. The state is also leveraging federal resources to try to remove barriers to people entering the labor force. And what barriers are these? Oftentimes, this is really fascinating stuff, by the way. I'm intrigued. I love it when I learn things from doing these interviews, and I definitely learned a lot this time. Certain people face what's called a benefit cliff by joining the workforce. If you're a single mother who's not in the workforce, who is depending on the government for, let's say, $20,000 of public assistance, and maybe you can join the workforce and get an entry-level job for $25,000 a year. Well, for anything that is means-tested that you no longer qualify for, having gotten that job, you're going to lose. So you have to factor in what you might be losing by getting a job. That is a benefit cliff, and it goes beyond just public assistance. How much are you going to have to pay for childcare? How much are you going to have to pay for transportation? Are you still going to, what's your insurance situation? So if it's not worth it for somebody to enter the workforce, then they're not going to do it. If it's not financially worth it, or even if it's an even bet, you know, maybe that's a barrier entering the workforce, and the state wants to remove those barriers. The U.S. Department of Labor recently approved the state's plan to use the WIOA funds. This is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, mostly referred to as WIOA. And it has several resources to help socially and economically disadvantaged populations. And I spoke with Nick Moore, who is the governor's advisor on education and workforce training. He says these WIOA funds can be used to help provide childcare, to help provide transportation, to help provide housing assistance, all those benefits that someone might be missing out on when entering the workforce. So if somebody's trying to seeking a job or getting job training, they can leverage these federal resources to help them. And you know, it's taking advantage of several different pots of money. Nick told me that there are over 100 different programs, federal programs, that are workforce development, meant to help workforce development, or meant to help, you know, people get into jobs. And it's leveraging those different pots of money that the state's trying to do to make up for these losses that people might have when entering the workforce. Really fascinating stuff, and I encourage you again to go and read more about it. We're going to talk more about it because I spoke with Tim McCartney. He is the chairman of the Alabama Workforce Council. Now, this is the group that serves as a conduit between the businesses of the state and the state agencies to make sure that the job training efforts are aligned with industry needs. Like we talked about, they want to see what are the needs out there and develop training programs according to those rather than having training programs in place and hoping they meet the needs of industry. That's his job as chairman of the Alabama Workforce Council. Of course, he comes from industry. You'll hear him talk about his background and why that's so important to helping understand the workforce needs of this economy. But you know, here we are in the middle of a pandemic, and that's what our questions are really about. Is, you know, y'all have all these great plans, but what happens now? So I really appreciated Tim taking the time to sit down with me and really go into the weeds about all the challenges, workforce and job recruitment challenges the state is facing, but also providing a sense of optimism. I have to say this, in all the officials we spoke to, from the governor to Secretary Canfield to Ed Castile, I mean, go down the list, even lawmakers, I'd say most of them are pretty optimistic in terms of the work the state has put in and how that will help us come out of this pandemic once it ends, once it finally ends. So here's that interview going in the weeds on workforce development amid COVID-19. Well, hey, Mr. McCartney, thanks for coming in the weeds with us today. I appreciate you making the time.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
You're the chairman of the Alabama Workforce Council. Had that role since, I guess, 2018. Is that right?
June 30th will be 2 years. So, yes, two years.
How about that? Well, how did your involvement in the state, the Alabama Workforce Council, come about?
Well, I've been involved with the workforce program since around, I guess it was Governor Riley's last term. He started the regional workforce councils, and I believe he started the workforce division at that time. It was in the community college system, and I was on their, back then it was called Region 5, Northeast Alabama region for Alabama Workforce Council. It's now referred to as Region 2. We did a realignment. And so I served on that committee. It was somewhere around, you know, 4 or 5 years. And then under Governor Bentley, the Alabama Workforce Council was developed and codified by the legislature. And I was appointed at that time to the Workforce Council. And then in 2018, our original and first chair, Zeke Smith, Alabama Power, he rolled off and they tapped me to be the chair.
Okay. Now, but your background's in the construction industry, correct?
We were in highway construction.
All right. So how does that background? Are you retired?
Well, I'm not retired. I'm without work. So now okay. we actually were in family business from 1945 till 2018, and we had an opportunity to sell the business, and we did in 2018, and which coincided with me coming with the Workforce Council chairmanship, and which has been filling a lot of my time, a lot of my spare time.
Yeah. Well, how does that, how does the construction industry, your background there, highway construction, translate into this role? What does it bring you as far as perspective into leading the Workforce Council?
Well, the one thing is we, you know, had a lot of employees. We had around, we were a smaller company, but we had around 185, 190 employees. And so we were constantly looking for qualified people to fill jobs in the construction industry. And it's during a time of high employment, low unemployment like we have, it's hard to find people. And that's what I did all my life. So I was in the industry for technically 40 years since college, but before that we were, you know, we worked in the, every summer that's what my job was go to work in the construction industry. So the skill level was transformed from the time I started the industry. There was not a lot of technology, but of course technology has improved tremendously. And highway construction is not a high-tech industry per se, but a lot of the instrumentation and equipment we use got to be a lot more technological and advanced. And so we had to have people that knew how to operate that equipment, how to maintain the equipment, and how to troubleshoot. So you couldn't just take anybody off the street anymore to do that type of work. And that translates well to what we're doing here is we're trying to, as you and I talked before about the Governor Ivey's Success Plus plan of where we want 500,000 additional skilled employees developed by the year 2025, having credentials, certificates, or degrees. Not necessarily four-year degrees, but we need to upskill everybody to be able to get a better, higher-paying job, and which will uplift the whole population of the state. And that's what we're trying to do.
So that's interesting. So 40 years ago, or even 30 years ago, 20 years ago maybe, you're doing building road projects around the state, southeast, and you're needing workers to do, you know, pretty, I don't know, more basic jobs than today. And now they need to, do they need a credential now, or do they need some experience now? I mean, how is that, give me an example of how that would change over time.
Well, one area that particularly affected us, we had asphalt plants. The plants, it's a manufacturing plant that takes aggregate and liquid asphalt, which is a petroleum product, and you heat it up to around 300 degrees, mix it together, and that's what you see going down on the roadways. People call it blacktop. It's mm-hmm. hot mix asphalt. Well, back in the early 80s, the state of Alabama, if you had a project with the state, you had to put a specific type of hot mix down. And the state at that time designed the mix for the contractors. Well, that was flipped 180 degrees where it became a end result specification where the contractor, instead of relying on the state to tell them what type of mix to put, we had to design our own. And that's really where a lot of the technology came in for us and our company. Because we had to have higher skilled people, a lot of math skills. We were able to train it. We went full in with that, and we had a really, really good lab and some lab technicians. But now there's a whole program that people have to have certifications to be able to design job mix. They have to have certification levels approved by the state to do density control testing. And so there's many tests that you have to do. 40 years ago, you didn't have that.
Interesting. Well, workforce efforts, workforce development efforts really have evolved over the years. You mentioned coming on to the council under Governor Bob Riley. I also worked in that administration second term. So we may have run into each other back then. But it's interesting to me because I think almost every governor has done something like that, some kind of task force or you know, department like that happened under Governor Riley, trying to streamline everything and bring it all under one roof. It seems like it keeps evolving, but I'm not sure I've seen it more streamlined than it is right now. And you mentioned it being codified by the legislature. So having been involved in this for some time, how has the past influenced where you are today?
Okay, well, originally, I'll tell you from my viewpoint, once I got involved, it was back under the Riley administration. And Blaine Gallagher was one of our local representatives, and Blaine is actually the one that wanted me to be on the council. And I was a little bit jaded at the time. I said, this is just a political stunt. There's an election coming up. I said, this is not going to work. And he said, come on, just try it. And so I did, and then I found out, there was a lot of seriousness. But at that time, we were just trying to create the structure. There was no budget available for any of the Regional Workforce Council. It was all volunteer. We had no executive directors. So there was a lot of work went into it, but still we needed more structure. Under Governor Bentley, the Workforce Council was started. We had a lot of the major manufacturers were behind that effort to advise him. And basically, we got, the Workforce Council is to develop policy on what is needed from industry's perspective on what we need to get higher skilled and better employees available. Now, we've got partners with all the agencies of the state, particularly with labor, commerce, the community college system, the K-12, because they are learning from industry what is needed to be transferred into the classroom to teach people what's needed in it, where they can get a job, a living wage job or higher, and that they can have a career pathway to future better and better jobs. I mean, we want to lift the boat for everybody in this state. So, the big change, I guess, in structure was now, for whatever reason, and I don't know why, but the workforce was moved to Commerce. Commerce houses it. AWC has their own group of industry reps, like I said, partnered with different agency heads. But the big difference is the Governor Ivey has created the Governor's Office of Education and Workforce Transformation. Long word. We call it the GOAT.
I think I know the guy who came up with that.
Yeah.
Which we are sitting in the office of the GOAT right now. So
that's right. But transferring direct power from over the workforce programs to the governor makes a big difference.
Okay.
Because the governor sees and the people and the agency heads understand the importance of that.
Well, and you mentioned the K-2, the education aspect, because a lot of that, there's a lot of coordination with the state board, superintendent, two-year colleges through the governor's office, so that seems more streamlined.
It is. Now, the K-12 has their own board, and the community colleges have their own board, but we've developed a great relationship with Chancellor Baker and also Dr. Mackey over at K-12, and we don't necessarily talk the same language. I've learned that because every agency has a different acronym they have lots of acronyms.
Yes.
Some of them use the same acronym that mean two different things. So that's a learning curve for all of us in industry. And we have our own acronyms.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine the construction industry has
lots. And some of them not repeatable. but we all know what it means. So, but anyway, I think that's the biggest difference is that you're working on what the governor wants done in the workforce. As far as the policy.
So would you say that the Workforce Council is essentially the confluence of industry bringing their requirements, needs, and everything to state agencies that can help put in those policies that get things done? Is that an accurate?
That's accurate.
Okay.
That's accurate.
Well, last year, you mentioned the 500,000. Last year, we wrote a couple of stories, probably three or four, about workforce development, including this, I think we'd characterize it as a pretty lofty goal of 500,000 new credentialed workers in the labor force by 2025. That was, I think, a story ran as soon as November of last year, calling it, that's a lofty goal. That wasn't that long ago.
No.
But that was before coronavirus. And, everything has changed. Unemployment is way up. I think we have as many as 500,000, same number, displaced from their jobs. So how has the coronavirus impacted that attainment goal for the Workforce Council?
Well, good you mentioned that, because I've had some of our members on the Workforce Council say, well, we can't use that goal anymore. And I say, no, we're doubling down on that goal, because where we had before, it's an aspirational goal, the 500,000. It's a lot of people. But it also ties into what some, like the Lumina Foundation that we work with, and they're experts on education and workforce and work nationally. But they had helped us develop that goal, helped the governor develop that goal. So there's some basis for where that number came from.
Sure.
You know, it may be 479,000, 500 is a round number. Everybody can remember that one. But back before the COVID virus hit, we were having trouble training people because we had the lowest rate of unemployment this state's ever had. In fact, I think, as mentioned to me, they took states 200 years old. It took 200 years to get to that point.
2.7, I think. Did it ever get
to 2.7? Yeah, I think it's a little bit under 3.
Yeah.
And it didn't take but a couple of weeks to destroy that. So
when we're writing stories about, is it too low? You know, that's it's historically low.
But we couldn't find a lot of people to train. Now we've got 500,000 people that have the opportunity to take advantage of the time out of work to get training, to get a better job. Because we don't know, nobody knows right now, it's just a guess, what the new world after post-COVID is going to be. You know, we don't know when we're going to get a virus, a vaccine. We don't know if we get a vaccine, what all these new social rules are going to continue. But we have the available people. There's a lot of them that are not going to go back to their job they were doing before the virus, just because of the change, you know, particularly in the service industries. But those are people that had jobs before that are certainly trainable, and they can get jobs again in the new post-COVID world. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to use the training systems we have, particularly with the K through 12, and they have the CTE programs there, but then the community colleges. We have community colleges in every region of the state, and they have the ability to train a lot of people. Now there's some things we're going to need to do, and I'm not an expert in that, but I'm learning. As you, I'm sure, have done a lot of Zoom calls and webinars. You know, I'd never done one before COVID. I've done plenty of conference calls, but not with video. But we're all getting pretty good at that. So that translates also into online training. And I think there's a lot of work being done across the nation, and I know there's a lot of work being done here in Alabama, of how to teach people online. I've got a daughter that's she's an Auburn University student, and she had to come home for the major part of her last semester this year. So she did online education. Now, she didn't like it as much, but she finished the semester, and she'd much rather be on campus with her friends than staying with her parents at home. But that's just something we're all going to have to learn. And I don't think we're all going to be stuck at home forever, but I do think there'll be a lot of people that are working at home now that won't go back to work full time because they found out they can be productive from their home. Mm-hmm. That's going to save a lot of time. It's going to save a lot of money for businesses as well on their utility bills and rental space. And then some of us have been talking since that it's a great opportunity for our state in that, you know, just based on what we're seeing in the news, if this sticks, a lot of the larger cities around the country are not going to have people coming back to office buildings, and they're going to work from home. Well, we've got a beautiful state. We've got a low-cost state, low cost of living. Why couldn't we recruit a lot of those people to come to Alabama? I mean, if I had a choice to live in a big city in a big high-rise apartment looking at the side of a building out my window working from home, would I rather do that or live in the mountains of North Alabama or live down on beach and Gulf Shores or Orange Beach? I think, you know, I might choose to come to Alabama. So yeah. I think we need to take advantage of that.
Is part of the challenge going to be reaching those displaced workers to say, hey, we've got opportunities. You know, get trained in some, in a different career path. Is that going to be a challenge going forward?
It is a challenge, and we're working with we've got some marketing plans out there. We're going to we've been working with George Clark, who's head of the Workforce Investment Board, working mm-hmm. with Nick and others amongst AWC, that we know we've got to revise the marketing plan that we've been working with because the world's changed. And but we've got a great opportunity, and we've got some great folks that do marketing for a living that we can depend upon to get that message out. So yeah, it's a challenge, but we're up to it.
Well, speaking of Nick, I was speaking to him the other day, and he was talking about the future of credentialing and how a degree or a certificate in the future might not look the same that it has in the past or even right now. Tell me more about that. What does that mean?
You know, people's career pathways are not necessarily a straight line from A to Z. Sometimes you go A to M and then back to K, and then, you know, it's so if you take somebody, we want to build models to where someone can get a 2-year certificate and then work in industry for a while, and while they're in industry, they can continue to go to school and get a, you know, higher and higher level of competencies, and they, you know, receive certificates to provide the employers, prospective employers, of what that person's capabilities and competencies are. So you're building, you're continually building, like building multiple story building. You know, you may start out with just one floor, but by the time you end your career, you can have a 10-story building. So
it's kind of modular. I mean, it's not complete. Just because you went to a 2-year program and got your credential, maybe that was the past. Now the new model is, why stop? Keep going and on that pathway.
Right. You hear the term lifelong learning, a lot of people, and that's what it is. You've got to continue to build on your education because industries change. Our needs change. It's you know, you hear a lot about artificial intelligence and it's being used now, and we need programmers, we need people that know how to build those models. But everything's not going to be, you know, super high tech. There's still going to be low tech jobs, but you have to have certain competencies to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And we just want to have plenty of opportunities for people to learn that and get certificates as they go. One example is, I was talking to one of our, we're having a discussion with Cleve Poole, who's in charge of our Structure and Alignment Committee, but they house the ACCCP Committee, which is working on the credentials. And Cleve said, you know, in my hometown, we've got guys that are going to community colleges and working on, say, auto repair, getting a degree in that, but they get 1 year under their belt. Well, there's a guy down the road that needs a guy with those skills, so they'll hire him. So his educational career has temporarily stopped, but he's got a job. You know, when you don't have a job versus when you get a job and it's a good paying job, you're usually going to take that job. So, but that doesn't mean that person can't come back to school at later or do it at night and get a higher competency level and get higher pay.
I'm probably learning more on the job too.
Oh, absolutely. Which ties into work-based learning. We're working really strong on trying to get work-based learning activities for our high school and college students. The legislature passed legislation on creating the Alabama Office of Apprenticeship. I'll get it right. But they're specifically working on setting up apprenticeships for with industry across the state that gives these students opportunities to work while they're in school. And there are a lot of actually federal incentives to help pay the employers. And also with the WIOA funds we have, you can, there's plenty of money to help people in need to get these jobs and career, educational work that they need to do. So
you talk about WIOA, that's basically the state trying to leverage federal funds to prop up what has been planned for workforce development efforts, right?
Yeah, a lot of that is you know, we owe funds are split two or three different ways. Again, I'll defer to the experts like George Clark and Nick to tell y'all where all that money goes. But it is a lot of federal money that comes to Alabama. We're fortunate to get it that are used to help people in need to get better jobs and better training for jobs.
Well, you know, you're not Greg Canfield. You're not an economist. So I'm not going to put like the question to you is about you know when is the economy going to come back or when are we going to get back to where we were? I won't put that on you. But I will ask this. Do you think that all of the work that's gone in, right? You talk about 2 years that you've been chairman and under Governor Ivey. Do you think that the planning that's gone on, the foundation that y'all have put in place, do you think we're going to be better off whenever we do recover, whenever we do rebound? Because of the structure that's been in place?
Oh, absolutely. I think we're going to be in a much better position. We're continually changing things, trying to improve it. We're learning as we go, as anything like this. There are a lot of moving parts in state government. As you know, you've been here in Montgomery for a while, so there's a lot of moving parts. We're trying to cut out some of the duplication of efforts. I think we've done some of that. We've got a lot more to do. And, of course, we're not here. The AWC is not here to redo government. We're here to advise them a better way to do something and also how to tell them what our needs are and what they need to adapt where their, particularly in education, where their product that they're developing mm-hmm. has the ability to get a job. And a lot of people, some people take issue with that, but if you think about it, business is the largest user of the educational system's product being the student.
Mm-hmm.
So if you create a product, you want to be able to use that product in the future, they need a good job. They need a good pathway to get a job. So that's what we're all about.
You mentioned the community colleges. We've got dozens of them in every corner of the state. We've got AID training centers. I remember the robotics thing was just getting started when I was around. Now it's, huge up there, maybe even getting bigger. The shipbuilding down in Mobile, I know they've got aviation in the Wiregrass. That's just to name a few. So we've got all these facilities around the state that do job training. My question is, what do we lack? Is there any industry that we need more job training centers? Is there any infrastructure that we lack in Alabama and could use more of?
Well, I think we've got a lot of good infrastructure in place. You name those few places, there are more. There's some in the automobile. I know there's one at Mercedes, one at Honda, mm-hmm. I think at Hyundai. But I think the future lies in we're going to have to become more online teaching. We don't need the buildings per se, but we need the availability to teach online and maybe more portable type training centers. Because you mentioned the robotics center in Decatur, and it's a terrific thing to have, but it's hard for some people to get to Decatur.
Yeah, if you're in Baldwin County and, yeah.
Or if you're in a rural county and you don't have the transportation ability, you can't get there. So we've got to be more adaptive to the online technology. And frankly, that's a if you're going to bring something good out of this COVID crisis, we're learning more about how to do that. I know their teachers are learning more about how to teach online. Now that's another issue, the infrastructure we need. We need, and we've been talking about this a long time, but the broadband mm-hmm. initiative, we've really got to do that. There's a lot of work to be done there. There's a lot of money that's required, but we need to be able to have broadband in every home that wants it in this state.
You think that's also been highlighted by the coronavirus? I mean, I've heard people say that.
Absolutely, and I've served on a little task force that helped advise K through 12, and that was one of the issues we talked about. Is you know some of the schools and the cities and all had no problem providing online education, but people in the rural area, you know, couldn't.
Yeah.
And some of that is because maybe the parents didn't want it in their home, but a lot of it is just because they don't have the ability to get it. So we have some telecommunications people in the state, you know, AT&T, Verizon, all the, those people, smaller companies, they're on that, but they just, I think they're ready to go. We just need to do what it takes to get it done.
I interviewed Dr. Mackey the other day. I mean, they're going with a virtual school statewide this year. Mm-hmm. When we were talking about it, what I think is just from my background is, okay, you're going to take your English class online, your social studies and science and stuff like that. But from hearing you talk, there's no reason why CTE can't also be a part of that online portal.
The hands-on part is the difficult part. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. If you take someone,
can't teach welding.
Right, welding's sort of tough. There are online and virtual programs, and we've looked at some of those as far as, you know, people have shown to AWC that. But, you know, there's nothing like getting the welding stick in your hand and your hood on and getting slag as you're welding, hitting your arms, and you learn why you wear long sleeves and heavy gloves and a face shield. But there's nothing like that to replicate that other than the real experience. But and then there's a lot of work. I think, you know, you can teach the liberal arts easier that don't require lab work. I'm talking about hands-on lab work, mm-hmm. like a chemistry or a physics or an engineering lab. So we've got to figure out how to do that, you know. And if we have to be socially distanced and smaller classrooms and all, we can do that. But I think we don't know what the end's going to be. You know, I'm pretty confident we'll have a vaccine. But then the next thing you're going to hear is, well, what about the next one? So I don't know. I'm optimistic that we have some really, really smart people in this country and in the world that can fix these problems.
Me too. Well, hey, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it, Mr. McCartney.
Well, thank you, Todd.